time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Rescue crews in central Mexico have been working around the clock in search of survivors following Tuesday's massive 7.1 earthquake. Cecilia Mendoza reports from Mexico City.
This earthquake was very particular because it didn't concentrate in one area. It actually traveled from north to south, affecting several areas throughout the city, which has made the efforts a little bit more complicated because the resources have been distributed in this city, which is a very large city.
There is no missing child at a collapsed Mexico City school, according to a high-ranking Navy official, though there may have been an adult still alive in the debris where an intensive rescue effort has been underway. Officials now say all of the school's children have been accounted for. Hurricane Maria strengthened Thursday as it approached the Turks and Caicos Islands, while continuing to dump more heavy rain on Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. Maria, now a Category 3 storm, was a more powerful Category 4 when it slammed into Puerto Rico Wednesday. The storm was the strongest hurricane to hit the U.S. territory in almost 90 years. The full extent of the damage has yet to be determined, given that communities remain isolated and unable to communicate. Meanwhile, Facebook will provide the contents of 3,000 ads bought by a Russian agency to Congress and is taking steps to make political advertising more transparent on its network. Investigators have sought the Russian ads for their probes into possible Russian interference into the U.S. 2016 presidential election. This is VOA. President Donald Trump added economic action to his fiery military threats against North Korea Thursday, authorizing stiffer new sanctions in response to the Koreans' nuclear weapons advances. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin explained what this means.
This new executive order will authorize Treasury to impose a range of sanctions, such as suspending U.S. correspondent account access to any foreign bank that knowingly conducts or facilitates significant transactions tied to trade with North Korea.
Well, he said China was imposing major banking sanctions too, but there was no immediate confirmation from the North's most important trading partner. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says President Trump has made a decision on the Iran nuclear deal, but he doesn't know what that decision is.
He had made a decision. He has not shared that with anyone externally. Prime Minister May asked him if he would share with her, and he said no. So I think the time has come for a decision to be made, and it is the president that has to make the decision.
On Tuesday, Trump disparaged the deal at the UN General Assembly, calling it one of the worst transactions the U.S. has ever entered into. It was negotiated during the administration of his predecessor, Barack Obama. Its provisions keep Tehran from developing nuclear weapons in exchange for lifting heavy economic sanctions. A truck filled with aid for Rohingya Muslim refugees in Bangladesh veered off a road and fell into a ditch Thursday morning, killing at least 9 aid workers. Millar Sega has details.
The accident occurred hours after another aid shipment in the refugees' home state in Myanmar was attacked by a Buddhist mob. Both shipments were from the International Committee of the Red Cross. More than 420,000 refugees have crossed into Bangladesh in less than a month. The Rohingya exodus began August 25th after Rohingya insurgent attacks on police set off a military crackdown. Millar Sega, VOA News.
Allstate expects insurance losses of about $593 million in August after Hurricane Harvey left a path of destruction along the Gulf Coast. The initial accounting Thursday follows warnings from other insurers that are tallying the damages from a hurricane season that is nowhere near being over. Lillian Bettencourt, the L'Oreal Cosmetics heiress and world's richest woman, has died at her home in a chic Parisian suburb. She was 94 years old. Her daughter said in a written statement that her mother left peacefully overnight. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, September the 22nd, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. The United States government announced that it is increasing aid to Yemen, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Somalia to help millions affected by food insecurity and violence. And in Mexico, rescuers are continuing to dig through rubble with shovels and picks in a frantic search for survivors 2 days after Mexico's deadliest earthquake in a generation. And Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said that the country's Supreme Court robbed the Kenyan people of their democratic rights when it annulled his win in last month's presidential election.
I hold our steadfast position that the will of the people of Kenya was subverted by our courts.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta addressing the nation. And in Uganda, the country's parliament postponed a bill to extend longtime President Yoweri Museveni's rule after protesters took to the streets against it, confronting police who fired tear gas. The constitutional amendment is opposed among many by the country's religious leaders.
Our silence is sickening. I'm sorry to say this. It seems to have gone in bed with the oppressors. So Martin Luther King says there comes a time when silence is betrayal. We are betraying. Our silence is betraying. God is betraying his people. It is time now.
Father Gaetano Batanyenda, the chairperson for Chigezi Interreligious Council. We have those stories plus sports roundup coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. The United States government is increasing aid to Yemen, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Somalia to help millions affected by food insecurity and violence. An additional $575 million in humanitarian assistance will be provided to the four countries. This was announced by the U.S. Agency for International Development Administrator Mark Green at the UN General Assembly. The agency said in a statement that tens of millions of people are in need of assistance in these four countries as a result of man-made crises. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta says that the country's Supreme Court robbed the Kenyan people of their democratic rights when it annulled his win in last month's presidential election. This is his toughest rhetoric yet in the wake of the August 8th vote. Mr. Kenyatta said that the Supreme Court ruling subverted the will of the people without due regard to evidence presented before them.
I hold our steadfast position that the will of the people of Kenya was subverted by our courts. The Supreme Court owes Kenyans an explanation on how such a monstrous injustice could have taken place. Not only did the judgment rob the Kenyan people of their democratic right as exercised on August 8th, but it also now has the potential to throw our country into judicial chaos.
President Kenyatta said that even though he disagreed with the Supreme Court's decision, he would comply with it.
As I have said before, I shall comply with the judgment. However, I state categorically that the constitutional right of Kenyans to elect leaders of their choice is non-negotiable. At the heart of the dispute is a simple point of principle. The purpose of an election in any democratic country is to determine the will of the people in whom all sovereignty resides.
President Kenyatta reiterated his government's commitment to ensure that the repeat elections are held.
I would like to state clearly that the government will do everything under the law to facilitate the IEBC to conduct another free, fair, and credible election in accordance with the ruling of the Supreme Court, an election that will once again enable the people of Kenya to exercise their democratic right. Let me close by saying this. Each one of us, especially we leaders, must ensure that even as we enter this new competition, we have a responsibility to ensure that the peace and stability that will deliver to all Kenyans the promise of shared prosperity that we as a people desire.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta in his address to the nation from State House, Nairobi. Uganda's parliament postponed a bill to extend longtime President Yoweri Museveni's rule after protesters took to the streets against it on Thursday, confronting police who fired tear gas. Parliament Speaker Jacob Olunya told lawmakers during a raucous session that the legislation due to be introduced on Thursday afternoon was bringing tension and would come back with another unspecified date. Halima Athumani has more from Kampala.
At Makerere University, students in red gowns came out of their residence halls Thursday morning, blowing vuvuzelas and whistles and chanting in the Luganda language, "Don't touch it." By it, they mean the Constitution.
We shall not allow this indirect dictatorship of President Kaguta Museveni. We are here to defend our rights. Every hope has been taken by President Museveni. The NRM kingdom is taking away our rights, so we have to defend. We have to defend and we have to fight for our constitution.
Their aim was to march to parliament, where a ruling National Resistance Movement legislator was expected to take the first step Thursday towards scrapping the presidential age limit of 75, which is mandated in the constitution. Before the students reached the university gates, riot police swung into action, firing tear gas. President Yoweri Museveni has been in office since 1986, and if the age limit is eliminated, he could be eligible to run in elections planned for 2021. By law, it is the Attorney General who introduces a constitutional amendment to Parliament. Last week, however, the ruling party said one of its legislators will introduce a motion seeking a leave from Parliament to introduce a so-called private member's bill to amend the constitution and lift the age limit. Deputy Attorney General Mwesigwe Rukutana told VOA Thursday he will not stand in their way.
We are not interested in taking it over because we trust the private member and the institution of parliament are well placed to handle the bill. And there is nothing wrong in us as cabinet to support what he's doing.
Security forces have been deployed throughout the capital, Kampala, over the past week, leading the opposition to accuse the government of intimidation. The parliament building remains under heavy guard, and VOA watched Thursday as police detained several prominent opposition politicians outside the building and took them away. The opposition said other members were kept under house arrest. After Parliament opened its session Thursday, the leader of all the opposition Parliament members, Winnie Kiza, took the floor.
I would want to ask that government comes up with an explanation as to why there was siege on Parliament. Some members of Parliament who are here, Right Honourable Speaker, their homes were surrounded. And that's why I'm speaking as a victim.
The Prime Minister, Ruhakana Rugunda, was invited to respond. However, as soon as he started speaking, legislators began whistling and heckling him. Some started singing the national anthem.
Please.
The police have more information.
Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Olanya, struggled to keep order in the fully packed house and eventually sent everyone home.
This matter that is bringing attention is not here today. And the proper process will handle it. But its implications have been there. So since there are two big problems which I've just enumerated, members not willing to sit and a speaker not also willing to sit, members who don't want to sit, this house is adjourned to Tuesday 2 o'clock.
The ruling party did not introduce its motion Thursday and did not comment on whether it plans to do so next week. Opposition lawmakers claimed victory. They left Parliament singing and told reporters that every day the Constitution remains untouched is a win. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Still in Uganda, religious groups and opposition leaders in the country are calling on the nation to rally together and ensure that the Ugandan Constitution is not amended to lift presidential age limits. They say that the age limits help prevent a perpetual president and thus ensuring democracy, peace and stability in the country. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files from Kampala.
Uganda's opposition leader, Alice Alasso, who is the acting party president of the main opposition party, Forum for Democratic Change, or the FDC, says the opposition will leave no stone unturned in their efforts to ensure the constitution is not amended.
We are going to work very, very closely with all forces in this country that do not want this constitution tampered with other political parties, civil society organizations, donors, whoever, even people from the NRM who do not want it lifted. This time, we will be working with them.
NRM stands for Ruling Party National Resistance Movement, which has been in power for over 30 years. Religious leader Father Gaetano Batanyenda, the chairperson for Kigezi Interreligious Council, agrees. Batanyenda says it is the responsibility of religious leaders to work together with other citizens to bring about respect of democratic principles in the country.
Our silence is sickening. I'm sorry to say this. It seems we have gone in bed with the oppressors. So Martin Luther King says there comes a time when silence is betrayal. We are betraying. Our silence is betraying. God is betraying his people. It is time now.
Norbert Mao is the president of opposition party, Democratic Party, ODP. He says his party will continue to work against lifting of age limits.
We are still intent on holding a meeting with the leadership of the Interreligious Council of Uganda so that we look at options of saving our country from going up in flames. I'm not a prophet of doom. We are grateful to the civil society organizations who have also dared to speak out. Our sister party, the FDC, has spoken out.
Mo started the Toju Kwatako campaign, which simply means do not dare touch Article 102 of the Constitution. Those opposed the amendment of the constitution fear that it would pave way for President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, who has been a president since 1986 and would otherwise be eligible to contest again because it would be over 75 years requirement to remain in power. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first woman head of state, bid farewell at the UN General Assembly in New York this week. President Sirleaf's appearance marked the historic closing of one of the high points of her presidency. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Cloti, the Liberian head of state discussed her legacy.
The legacy of having taken a destroyed country, give it peace, maintain peace for over, if we include the interim period, over 15 consecutive years, as compared with 30 years of conflict, of war, of destruction. And in the process, on the basis of that peace, restored basic services to the Liberian people, those services missing over many years, you know, built the institutions that were largely dysfunctional over many years. I'd like to say it's a great legacy.
That was Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Cloti at the UN General Assembly in New York. Zimbabwe's head of elections body says that voter registration will continue until candidates for next year's polls have been nominated by their respective parties. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare for VOA.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission head Rita Makarau said the voter registration exercise, which started last week, would continue beyond January 2018, which had been stipulated by President Robert Mugabe's proclamation earlier this month. She asked for patience when Zimbabweans get to the voter registration centers being done by the country's Electoral Commission, better known by its acronym, ZEC.
ZEC's aim is to register all eligible Zimbabweans, notwithstanding their party affiliations, and we hope to live up to that promise to register not less than 7 million.
Voter registration opened last week. The goal is to create the country's first biometric voter registry before Zimbabwe's 2018 elections. On Thursday, the High Court dismissed an urgent petition by the opposition seeking the Electoral Commission's registration exercise to be halted until it has increased the number of registration centers, especially in areas where the ruling ZANU-PF party is weak. The opposition fears that not all potential voters would be registered given the slow pace of the exercise. Opposition MP Priscilla Misiahira-Bwimushonga comments on the current voter registration exercise.
I'm quite disappointed in the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. I actually don't know whether if we continue in the manner that they are continuing now, we can actually say we have a legitimate process. The way they've started it does not give confidence to me as a member of parliament who is supposed to be going out and giving the same confidence to people in my community, to people in my constituents. I don't have the confidence because I don't have information. I don't know what this is all about because no one has said anything to me.
In a wide-ranging interview with the Election Resource Center late Thursday, the Zimbabwe Elections Body head Makarau said the situation would improve. She said voter registration would continue until 12 days after candidates for 2018 elections have been nominated by their respective political parties. Asked when Zimbabwe 2018 elections would be held, Makarau said,
I don't know. We know it was going to be sometime in 2018, according to the constitution, around about July, August 2018, but we don't know the exact date. We will wait to be consulted. Not of when we think it's best, of when he thinks it is best. The determining factors will be, I would say, from my own personal perspective, yes, as an administrator of elections,
right,
is that we need to have all the fundamentals in place, and one of the fundamentals is a credible voter's roll.
The he in that response was President Robert Mugabe, who says the dates for Zimbabwe's elections. Now it remains to be seen if the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission will have a credible voters registry for 2018 elections. So far, frustration has been mounting amid long queues at voter registration centers and accusations that the Electoral Commission is not ready for the exercise. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak on the Voice of America. And in Gambia, the country is in the process of setting up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission and hopes to offer reparations to victims of former President Yahya Jammeh's government, which is accused of torture and killing of perceived opponents. Reporter Sene Marena brings us this report about how that process is going.
Has preparation for the establishment of the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparation Commission move at an advanced state? People from all walk of life have expressed their opinion, saying the commission will help heal the wounds of ex-President Jammeh's 22-year rule and reunite the country. With appropriate reparation for victims, according to Justice Ministry official, the aim is to encourage people to confess crimes committed under the previous regime and for victims to narrate the injustice they suffer. Sekou Jammeh is the Secretary General of Gambia Press Union.
The role of the media in the upcoming Truth and Reconciliation Commission is very crucial, if not the most important players there, because all the injustice that we are talking about, we are able to know them today thanks to the media's report.
Jeffrey Smith is the executive director of Washington-based pro-democracy movement Vanguard Africa.
And the good thing for Gambians and for the Gambian government in particular, there are many successful examples, not only in Africa, but around the world for transitional justice processes that they can look to derive inspiration and for lessons learned. So I think the future looks bright.
For Ola Johnson, a specialist in transitional justice who is currently training a group of journalists on the subject in the Gambia, comprehensive reporting is critical during the TRRC, which is expected to dip into sensitive facts and issues.
My own role here is to prepare them for transitional justice, to give them an insight into what transitional justice is all about. You have just started with the TRC. The TRC is just like one of the mechanisms that are involved in the process of transitional justice.
Sally Utal, a civil society leader and co-founder of the Gambia Has Decided movement, said it is the right thing to do in the aftermath of great socio-political turbulence under Jammeh.
We are now building a new nation, and to build a new nation, we must ensure that we learn from the past and also make sure that those who have suffered injustice have their day.
Banjul note lawmaker Usman Silla believed the TRRC will heal the nation and provide effective closure for trauma individually and collectively suffered.
Since we are talking about national reconciliation and with the slogan One Gambia, One People, One Nation, there is need for the past to be reviewed so that the past mistakes will be known and then rectified.
Tamusar of Tango, an umbrella body of civil society bodies in the Gambia and a member of the National TRRC consultative team, said Gambians are keenly looking forward to the commencement of the commission. Others, however, reserve different opinions. They include Anna Jones, executive director of ONEP Gambia.
It's good for the commission to look beyond just victims and witnesses, but to include the broader society, and that includes civil society as well, as this helps to popularize the commission. It helps to promote inclusivity, as well as for people to buy into the whole process.
Meanwhile, right groups have called on the Gambia government to indict those responsible for grave crimes committed during the 22-year rule of former President Jammeh. For many, fair trials are crucial for victims and their families in order to nurture a greater respect for rule of law in the country.
Reporting for VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Seni MK Marina.
And now it's time for our sports roundup with our sports editor, Samson O'Malley in Abuja. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the West African Regional Football Competition, known as the WAF Cup of Nations, currently taking place in Ghana. Nigeria and Ghana will meet in the finals following their victories in the semifinals on Thursday. Steven Safro handed Ghana a 2-0 win over Niger, while Rabiu Ali of the Super Eagles scored the only goal against Benin Republic to set up the final between the two West African giants. CAF President Dr. Ahmed Ahmed is in Ghana for an executive committee meeting and a WAFO Cup final on Sunday. The CAF President told journalists on arrival in Ghana that they will be making some big decisions regarding African football in the next few days.
We are here for the executive committee meeting. As you know, we tried to share this meeting to go to see what happened in Africa, because CAF is for Africa. But you see that the meeting of the executive committee is held on every country in Africa. So we have a big agenda for this meeting. And I mean, we are going to take a big decision here in Ghana. And we are happy to be here to discuss about the future of football.
Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission has charged the country's FA boss, Isha Johansson, and her Secretary General, Chris Karama, to court with abuse of office and misuse of public funds. The charges were leveled only hours after she announced her intention to seek re-election. Isha Johansson has denied the charges, saying she is focused on getting the job done.
If they do have a strong opinion against me, one way or the other, I don't know. And I certainly do not spend any time trying to listen to what people have got to say, particularly about me, because you can't always like everybody. And that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to get a job done within 4 years. And what I'm able to do, I do it within the shortest possible time, given the constraints that I have.
In women's football, South Africa's Banyana Banyana advanced to the final of the COSAFA Women's Cup in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, in dramatic fashion on Thursday. Banyana Banyana came back from 3-0 down with 15 minutes to play to take their semi-final clash against Zambia to a penalty shootout, emerging 5-3 winners on penalties. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports this Friday morning. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Friday, September the 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good weekend, Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.